This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 261, recorded on Wednesday, November 7th. My name is Martin Spriggs. You are listening and watching a show that talks about technology and ministry. And helping me do that, as usual, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Hello, Sally.
Hey, Martin, and good afternoon. Not only are we recording on a Wednesday, which is not normal, but it's in the afternoon, not the morning. So we're breaking all the traditions on Wells Tech today, but for a very good reason.
Yeah, I don't know how good a reason it is. But I've got jet lag, so I beg your indulgence as I go through. I just got back from Hong Kong and Japan. I was there all last week and first part of this week at the Asia Lutheran Translators Conference. And what a neat experience. There were about 80 people there from, I think, 10 different countries, something like that, all over Asia. We had Korea, Nepal, Pakistan, China, Japan, Thailand, Taiwan, all people interested in translating not just the Bible, but translating all kinds of religious materials, the People's Bible and other publications that we have produced in the Well to share with thirsty souls. And we had 5 days of translation conversations. I was there presenting on how to hopefully speed up the translation process through technology tools. So I had a number of sessions and great discussion. So it was wonderful.
And lucky for us, you took along your camera, I believe. Yeah. I saw some nice photos shared via your Google Plus account. Mm-hmm. So if you follow Martin on Google Plus, you should go over and check out his albums because you saw some pretty amazing sights there.
It is. Yeah, this is my first time in Asia, so it was all new to me. And had a couple of people that knew where they were going, and that was great too. I spent the last 3 days with missionary Brad Wardell in Japan, so I saw some of those sites there as well. But I'm back, and we're doing another podcast. So happy to be doing that. So Sally, we are doing that once a month show called our Seven Best. And Seven Best what this week?
Well, this week we're talking about video and web conferencing tools, so ways to basically use the internet to connect with others, to conference via video or even screen sharing so that maybe you want to do some support of someone at a distance from you, or you want to share a PowerPoint presentation with someone who's not able to be in Bible class in person, or whatever your need may be. There are some great free, many times, services that are available on the web that you can make use of for that distance work.
Absolutely. And as usual, we invited listener contributions, and we've got a few of those on the list. The field within which we're working is, although pretty broad, there are some key players that continually appear on the scene and provide different sets of products. And I guess maybe I'd characterize the list as maybe three different categories. You've got the very straightforward, maybe video and IM products, and that's what they do well. So it's more personal one-to-one or one to a few others. You have a second class that adds maybe more of a business focus, where they allow screen sharing and web conferencing, so you can do some collaboration and work on things together. And then the third set is kind of the cream of the crop that does all of those and have been around a while and maybe the most reliable. So where are we starting with number seven, Sally? Mm-hmm.
Number seven is actually one that was submitted by a listener. Pastor Rob Gunther up at Grace in Kenai, Alaska, wrote to us. And one of the things he mentioned was that he uses TinyChat at tinychat.com. Now, it's probably one of those that's just the basics. You just get a video stream, a little text chat window, and very quick and easy to connect. If you go and set up a chat room, then you can share a link to that chat room. People don't have to go to TinyChat and download any software or anything like that. And that was the main reason that Pastor Gunther liked it. He said that he uses it for midweek Bible classes, since you can just share a link and it's easy to invite everyone, and they're, boom, they're right in the TinyChat environment without any downloads or software install. So. Yep. Sounds like a good, solid pick that he's making use of there in Alaska.
Simple and easy are very important requirements for something like this. If there's a big download or a lot of complicated features, that's got a learning curve involved. And if it's just one-offs or something that you want to get maybe technically challenged folks, and you know there are certainly many of those, you want to make it as easy as possible. Here, just click this link. That's about as easy as you can get. So. So that's number seven. Number six is something that we've talked about on the show before, Sally. Mikogo. Mikogo is a what they bill as a remote desktop web conferencing and online messaging tool. And there is a free version. There's also a paid for version that'll give you a few more features. And we've tried this out. It works on multiple platforms, and so you can install it on a Mac. You can install it on Windows, and the different plans give you a little bit more flexibility and a few more participants as well. But you can do the desktop sharing. I think they even have different languages available, so that helps if you're doing work with in a cross-cultural ministry setting or with people not in your country. You can do file transfers. I think that in general, they've kind of covered a lot of the bases with that, not just the video chat, but also the web or the screen sharing side, which is, I'd call it more of a business tool than, let's say, something like TinyChat.
Obviously, if you're paying for their pro accounts, you're going to expect a level of uptime and service. You got to get something for what you're paying for, especially with so many free competitors. So again, kind of a business solution, I would think, if you really need it to be, solid and very, very versatile and have lots of capabilities, then probably Mikogo is a leader in that regard.
Yep. What's next? What's that number five?
Next up is one called Vue with a lovely internet spelling, V-Y-E-W, Vue.com, which does basically the same thing. You can share your desktop. You can add annotations and things. You can do... mainly the screen sharing is the big draw there. And I have used this one before. I believe it's totally free. I'm not sure if they have a pay-for version or not. But, the price tag is great. Unlimited use account for free. So Vue.com. I remember learning about this probably 3 or 4 years ago now from a Wells Tech listener who sent me a link to this one. So it's a solid tool, and it's been around for a while.
The product occupying the number four slot on our list is called Uvu. Again, a funny spelling, O-O-V-O-O. And we know that a number of our listeners use this. I was talking with Gonzalo de Gadillo the other day, and I know that he uses this. Again, this is that video, really that focus on social video chat. So you can do group video, instant messaging. You can actually record and upload your conferences to YouTube. So there's a little bit different flavor there. So it's got a lot of those kinds of features. And they've been around quite a while. Uvu has pretty solid infrastructure and if you're looking for something that gives you maybe a little bit more than something like, again, like a TinyChat, then Uvu may be something that you may want to try. I think it's very easy to get going, and I do think it is predominantly web-based. So that's number four.
Yeah. Coming in at number three is actually my favorite site in terms of offering support to people, being able to share screens, and not just share screens, but actually take control of their computer. The website is called join.me. And again, you can get a free account. There is a pro account available, but I've never had a need to go with the pro account. Everything I need is in the basic free account. There is a download. It takes a very short amount of time, depending on if you're the one instigating the meeting or not. It pushes the download out to you. Once you start a meeting, you get a little toolbar along the top, and it gives you a meeting number, and then you send people to join.me, and they type in the meeting number here in the green area of the screen, and click the big join button that's a big green arrow on the screen, and then they get pushed a little download. They have to okay that, so sometimes you have to coach people through that process. Now, it's going to prompt you, and you have to say okay in order to download the software, but again, it's really, really quick. I mean, like maybe 10 seconds or something. It's not a big download. And then just like that, you as the instigator of the meeting, your screen is displayed to them. And they can actually take control of your screen and manipulate it. So here's my mom down in Mississippi, and her computer's not working. I send her to join.me and have her start the meeting. And then she tells me the number, and I type it in, and then I coach her through giving me control, and I can work on her computer from Minnesota. And so that is just a really powerful thing if you're offering any kind of support. And, you know, you could do it, I don't know, you could do it on your church team's computers if you needed to share screens or whatever. Obviously, you don't have to give control. You could just display a PowerPoint or a document or whatever and talk through it. I don't think join.me has audio.
Yes, they do.
They do. Okay.
They have, as I was going to mention that, they do have audio conferencing, either VoIP built in or via a local phone number. So you can do either one. You can also kind of embed your own teleconferencing system if you want, if you have another system, and you can, with the invitations that you send out, that can be sent out with it. So that's a great feature. And I don't believe they have video, though, so this is a little bit different in that respect from some of the other things, right? I want to say they don't have video. Yeah. So this is more screen sharing. But as you mentioned, one of the big selling points of join.me is just the simplicity. You know, just send them a link or send them to join.me and have them enter a code. It's done. Mm-hmm. And it installs really quickly. It's a small download, and it's really simple to use. So join.me is one I would highly recommend if you're just interested in screen sharing. So.
Yep. Or helping your mom in Mississippi.
Yeah. Number two on the list is one of my faves, and that is Google Hangouts. Those of you that are watching are enjoying Google Hangouts. This is kind of our go-to video conferencing now that Sally and I use for the podcast. And I even actually grabbed the audio from our Hangout. So I downloaded and pulled the audio off. We talked all about Google Hangouts, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Sally? That was really the focus of one of our shows. So I won't go into great detail here, but you do have a couple of advantages. You can have up to 10 people video conferencing. There's chat. There's applications. You can share video. You can record the conversation, too, or you can live stream it like we're doing right now, and then also pull down the video later. It works pretty seamlessly with YouTube. And Sally, both you and I have experienced long sessions with Google Hangouts, because this summer we did 3 days, or at least I think, I don't know if you did 3 days. I know I did 3 days straight.
Four.
You did 4 days.
Yeah, maybe I did.
I had 10 people in the conference for 3 straight days, just screen sharing, and everybody was sharing video, and it never skipped a beat. So it was a really solid platform.
Yeah, and I think we've seen it improve over time. We were just commenting as we came in that they've changed things a little bit today as we're doing a Google Hangout. And so obviously there's room for improvement, but it's been a solid tool for us. And if you've been watching our video podcast, you can attest to the fact that it's been a solid tool because we've been using it now for 11 shows.
Huh? Yep. And no download needed. It does install an extension within a browser. I don't know if it's Flash or what it's using, but if you're using it for the first time, there's a quick install of something, but it's not bad at all. And I'd say it's the one challenge, as we mentioned, I think when we talked about this on the show before, is you need to have a Google account. So, and you need to be a little bit comfortable with how circles or how, Google Plus works, because that's where you get invited to these hangouts. So it's in the Google sphere, so that's a part of it.
We provided instructions for our class this summer, and we had plenty of people that didn't have Google accounts beforehand, and they figured it out. They survived. So I think you can make it work even with people that are newbies to it.
Yep, yep. And a lot of people are getting more comfortable and familiar with Google. Mm-hmm. So. Sally, that leads us to number one, and most of our listeners probably have already figured out what the number one video and web conferencing tool is.
Yep. Surprisingly, we didn't pick Google Hangouts because our friends at Skype have been in this space a lot longer than Google Hangouts has existed, and I think they do an excellent job with it. You can use Skype for audio connections, but you can also use it for video conferencing, and it says with up to 10 contacts, and you can pay for Skype out to telephones, regular telephones, so you can call regular phones through Skype as well, and you can pay for international calls as well at very low rates. Yeah. And so lots of flexibility here. Within the last year or so, Skype has been integrated with Facebook, so you can have video chats via your Facebook account and still keep Facebooking at the same time. And then I just read an interesting article today on CNET about a big announcement from Microsoft, and that Microsoft is going to ditch their Messenger tool in favor of Skype. Mm-hmm. So Messenger is going away. They said already in the first quarter of 2013, they're switching over to Skype as their full messaging tool. Yep. So,
and that makes sense. They don't need to, and you can easily instant message with Skype as well as Messenger. Messenger actually did do audio and video too, so they were really competing products, so it didn't make any sense since Microsoft has purchased Skype last year, or maybe even before, that you knew Messenger has its
days
were numbered, right? Yeah. So another thing about Skype, and that probably is what kind of drove it to the number one spot on my list, is it can be a telephone replacement. So if you're looking to just ditch your landline and go totally VoIP, Skype can do that for you because it can assign you a real number so anybody can call you whether they have Skype or not. So you can Skype out, you can Skype in, it has voicemail. So not only is it video conferencing and web conferencing, but it has that good VoIP service that most people use it for.
Yep, it will do it all. We actually have a Skype phone in our family. We don't pay for any long distance on our regular telephone, but use Skype for all our long distance calls that we aren't making on our cell phones. So.
Yep. So Skype is number one. So that's our countdown of the 7 best video and web conferencing tools. Hopefully those are useful to you and find maybe a place in your ministry plans and your technology/ministry plans. So a lot of them are free, and I think we'll see a lot more advancements in this space as we get a little bit more broadband access across our country and other countries where these things become pretty standard stuff.
Yeah. So 2012 has been the year of 7 best list for us here on Wells Tech. We've been doing this each month. And as 2012 draws to a close, we had to come up with a topic for our last 7 best list of 2012. And so our show in December will feature 7 best mobile computing tips. just thinking that more and more people have mobile devices, and probably as Christmas time rolls around, maybe it's time that some people that don't will be adding a tablet or a mobile device to their arsenal of tech tools. So we thought we'd count down some of our favorite and our listener favorite mobile computing tips. So please share with the class if you have anything that makes your life easier, your ministry more efficient with mobile devices.
Yeah, can be smartphones, tablets, Kindles, you know, whatever it is. I'm sure you've got some tips out there. Mm-hmm. So, very good. Let's move on to news and tech. And we've got some news this week.
It has been a newsy week, that's for sure. Starting with a lot of articles and how-tos and things coming about the new Windows 8 release. And I just wanted to include a link in our show notes to Windows site on how to get started with Windows 8 and just different video tutorials and things like that that they have to help you transition from your comfortable Windows environment to a brand new Windows environment.
When I was in Hong Kong and Japan and Tokyo, I went down there. Those places are obviously known for their electronics. So I walked down probably one of the most famous electronic avenues or alleys in both places. And just row after row, there were probably 300 or 400 stores, you know, lined up. And they were all, many of the ones that actually sold computers were really pushing Windows 8. So we had signs all over the place, along with iPad minis and the latest and the greatest. So it was very interesting. I didn't find any knockoffs, or I would have maybe picked something up. But very interesting place.
Well, it's funny that you mention iPad minis and iPads, because that there are a couple of other news articles I wanted to make mention of. The iPad 4, as of today, is now in stock at the Apple Store. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit before the promised delivery. So people were excited to see it in place. And also, this was an interesting article about some benchmarking that they did between the iPad mini and the iPad 4. And apparently the iPad mini has an A5 processor, right, and the iPad 4 has an A6. And so I don't know what the numbers mean exactly, but the iPad 4 scored a 1700 and the iPad mini scored just a 752. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty dramatic difference between the speeds that were measured on the two devices. So maybe that'll play into which one you want to you want to invest in. I held an iPad mini this weekend. Martin, have you actually put your hands on one?
In Hong Kong.
They're lightweight. They're really small and lightweight. So
I'd say they're a little, I've got a Nexus holding here, and I would say that this is more comfortable to hold than the iPad mini. I couldn't really get, I mean, it's wider. I mean, it's a little bit different form factor, so it would, you know, I'd have to stretch my thumb out another inch or so to really grab the iPad mini. But it looks like a nice device, but the complaints are that the screen is not on par with the iPad 3 or 4. And just a reminder, the iPad 4 is only a slight upgrade to the iPad 3. Same form factor, same screen. It's just that updated processor, which is going to make it run a little bit faster.
Okay. One more news item worth sharing, just picked up on this from CNET as well, that Amazon is now getting into the monthly plan with their streaming service. It's called Prime, and to date they've only offered it as a $79 per year plan, but now they are going to offer a $7.99 per month Prime plan. So I guess they're trying to compete, like the article says, with Netflix and Hulu. Christmas time is here, and maybe people will be signing up for these services as gifts or whatever. And you can get a 1 month free trial of it prior to signing up for the monthly plan. So just a little bit of change in the streaming marketplace there.
Yeah. And this is a part of an article I'm reading there, is that Amazon is considering Netflix and Hulu with this plan as well, offering those services. So that'll be interesting, right?
Sure.
Or is it, are they competing with them?
I think that they're competing. I think that's kind of what they're getting at there.
Yeah, so that makes some sense if you are maybe interested in doing some holiday shopping. I've got the Prime plan, and the free shipping is great. So you're a online shopper this Christmas season, that may be worth checking out.
Right. So it's not all about the video streaming. You do get free shipping from Amazon all the time with the Prime plan.
Free two-day shipping. So
it's okay.
Regular shipping.
All right.
All right. So is that it for our news?
I think that's enough news for this week. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to our picks of the week.
And I'm first.
Do you want me to go first?
How do we do this?
Why don't I go first?
Okay. You do that.
I'll go first. My pick, I know I got. I was not ready. Now I've got to go.
Yeah, it wasn't either. Can you tell?
I see what the deal is. My pick of the week is called Safe Gmail. And Safe Gmail is a plugin. It only works with Chrome, although they're developing a Firefox extension as well. But it allows you to send encrypted email using PGP, or pretty good privacy encryption, with your Gmail account. And I can do a quick demo here for those of you that are watching, and I'll kind of walk everybody through it as I'm doing this for your audio listeners. When I send an email, so I will just send this to my good friend Sally Draper.
That's me.
And I'll just put in the traditional test as the subject. I have now, once I've installed this, and it just appears as an extension, just like all your other Google Chrome extensions, I have now a button that says encrypt, and I can check that. And what it allows me to do is type in a super secret question. So what is, let's see, what is the Wells Tech 7 best list for December? And then I type in the answer,
mobile
tips.
Keeping track. Good.
Yep. And then you type your message, whatever that happens to be. And then the button that normally says send in Gmail becomes send plus encrypt. So I'm going to go ahead and send this. Sally will get this email, and I can show you what it looks like here in my sent email. It's all this junk, so you, nobody can read this. But what would happen is you would go to Safe Gmail. First of all, you'd copy all this junk. This is the encrypted text. Then you would go to safegmail.com. Oops, I'm sorry. You would go to...
We all occasionally send sensitive information through email.
Safe Gmail has that annoying video that starts right away. You click on the... there is a link in the message. It says click here to access the mail content. And I am asked, what is the Wells Tech 7 best list for December? And I have to know the answer to that as the email recipient. So I say, we'll say mobile tips. I hit submit. Then I can paste the copy in. And then it says show my mail. And then it decrypts it, and you see exactly what the email was. So I shared this at the Asia Translators Conference, especially those that are living in countries where the government may be checking out your email. And so they were very thankful to have a tool like this that could encrypt an email that, you know, couldn't be seen by prying eyes, and they could talk about, you know, their activity or whatever. There may be other reasons for email encryption, but this is just a super easy way to get it done as long as the receiver knows the answer to your question. So I wouldn't count on it for top secret stuff, but it's a quick and easy way to encrypt your email.
Very cool. I did it from this end while you were doing it. I received your message and followed the steps with you, and it worked just perfectly for me as well. So I'm a satisfied customer. Good okay. job.
Price tag is free. Just do a search in the Google Store for Safe Gmail.
Yep, and we'll have a link in the show notes as well.
Okay. Yep. Very good. Now to your pick, Sally.
Yes, I'm ready for you. I wanted to share a link to the mathcounts.org website. website. This is something I'm involved with at our school here. We're doing it for the second year, and I'm sure I probably talked about it some last year as well. Our kids got involved last year and did really well in it. It's a great program. I'm really impressed with it. They have three different levels. There's a competition level, a club program, and then something they call the Real Math Challenge, which is good for all the techies in our listening audience for sure. The competition program is set up through the National Math Counts program. They have a state level competition in each state and then regional level competitions to qualify for state. And many of the Society of Professional Engineer groups throughout the country volunteer and are part of this because they want to encourage that STEM type knowledge, the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics knowledge. And so this is a great way to do that. Separate from that, and you don't have to participate in the competition program to be part of the club program, that's basically just sending you free materials for kind of an after-school math club. I guess you could do it during school as well. But they have some really high-quality stuff, and there is a testing process with the club program. They don't have to score certain scores on the test. They just have to go through the process of taking the test. And last year we did that, and we got a beautiful, I don't know, probably 8-inch high etched glass trophy. Wow. The kids were just really excited about it. And again, that whole club program is completely free. Mm-hmm. So this year, they always have one big thing, one big project they send with the club program. They sent us a game board, and it's completely blank, and they want the kids to design their own game. They sent us pieces and dice and blank cards to make cards for drawing and things like that. And so they want them to go through that process of thinking out logically how to set up a game and draw it out on a game board and stuff. So that's one of the projects we'll do with our club program this year. And then finally, they have what they call the Real Math Challenge. And this was new for them last year. And basically, they asked the clubs to submit videos to explain math problems. And I'm going to include a link in the show notes to the video that won last year because it is just really excellent. The kids explained combinations and permutations, that kind of thing, with an example of packing clothes so that they had different sets of outfits to wear. And it's really
I could have used that last week.
There you go. You could learn something in the process.
I had to pack for 12 days. I don't normally have to pack for 12 days.
Yeah. So very creative. These kids won an all-expense-paid trip to the Nationals competition in Florida last year just by making a video for Math Counts. And so even if your kids aren't interested in competing, they can be part of the competition by doing a fun video that explains math. And cool. I think you'll enjoy this one. So definitely check it out. I couldn't recommend it higher. It's a great program to be a part of. Our kids got really excited about math and the process, and that's a good thing. So mathcounts.org.
So who's behind this? Is this, this is not a government thing.
The sponsors are all big technology groups like Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, Texas Instruments, 3M. Actually, here in the New Ulm area, the local 3M sponsors a small New Ulm meet before we go to regionals. And they buy free t-shirts for all the kids and feed them lunch. And they actually pay our fees for being part of the competition program, which is about $100 to $150, depending on how many kids you register. 3M pays that for us. So they sponsor us here in New Ulm through 3M. And all these different companies get involved. Like I said, at the state level, it definitely was the National Society of Professional Engineers that were running the state meet and mm-hmm. everything. So okay. It's really neat to see them get involved with the kids that way. They seem to really enjoy it. At our regional meet, the kids all got free thumb drives. Uh-huh. And they were in a bracelet. So it was a real cool giveaway that they got. Very geeky. And,
yeah, I was going to say.
A lot of fun.
Very nice. Nice pick. Mm-hmm. Okay, Sally, we want to make sure everybody is aware of an upcoming live streaming event, which is a lot of fun if you tune in. And that is Choral Fest every November. There's two Choral Fests, and I think only one of the two that I'm aware of is streaming the event. And the East they do every other year. It's regional, so there's an east and a west. The east region, which I think I want to say is at Shoreland, but I could be wrong, is going to be live streamed, and that is this Friday and Sunday. So Friday is kind of the Pops song and dance presentations by all the schools, all of our area Lutheran high schools and prep schools, and then Sunday is the sacred concert. So, and those times are, Sal, you have those
Friday seven? Night at 7 p.m. Central and Sunday at 2 p.m. Central. Okay, and that'll be on our live stream page on the Wells website, and we'll put a link in our show notes.
Very nice. So you might want to tune into that. That's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to community feedback.
Yeah, and we have a lot to share this week. Just love our Wells Tech listeners and all the great information that they share. Starting with our Wells Tech listserv, if you aren't familiar, our listserv exists so that you can email a whole bunch of techies, and they typically respond real quickly to whatever questions or problems or things that you're stumped by with technology. And in that regard, Ken Becker from Star of Bethlehem emailed and asked if anyone used a free web-based help desk software. They want to set up something for their teachers, pastors, and other staff to add tickets to and to be able to track and add comments and search based on different challenges they're facing so that they have a knowledge base in place so other people can benefit from it. We use something like that at the Synod level, but I wasn't familiar with an open source or free available version. And a couple of different ideas came through the listserv. First off, someone responded that their building and grounds committee does something like that using a Google site. And so that's one way that you could do that for free, set up a Google site to track those needs. The predominant suggestion was to use something called Spiceworks. Martin, maybe you're familiar with Spiceworks, but
yeah, we tried it here in the Synod office. It's a great open source tool. It didn't meet currently all of our needs, but I think for smaller organizations especially, it's probably a nice sweet spot.
Yeah. Our friend Jason Schmidt chimed in and said that that's what they use in the school district where he works. He has about 170 employees and more than 500 machines, and it works pretty well for their purposes. He said it is not completely web-based. It runs off a web server internally for them. And there were others who recommended Spiceworks as well. So I thought that was neat to have it coming from different sources, you know, obviously validating that it is a good tool to use. The last one, though, was the one I got most excited about, probably because I'm most familiar with this platform. Someone wrote in and suggested that they use a WordPress blog for this need. And they make their tickets are a blog post, and they exchange information with the comments area on each of the blog posts. And so they use it for a variety of things, the posting of meeting agendas, and board members can post comments on that. It gets some of their discussion taken care of outside of those meetings and things. And then I was thinking further about this, you could use categories, perhaps it comes in and is categorized as an
email tag.
Okay. So. As an open one. And then, you know, when you're done, you could switch it to a closed category or whatever. So I really think that's a cool and workable solution. Just with a little bit of setup work, you can make a WordPress blog work for you that way.
Very creative.
Like yeah, that. Definitely. Okay. So one more question that came through on the Wells Tech listserv just today was from Joshua Johnson, who's out at Nebraska Lutheran High School, and he's looking for feedback on social bookmarking for the classroom, wondering what tools people are using and what they would recommend. And so far, Jason has responded that they definitely make use of Digo in his school district, and there's an administrative panel that goes along with that if you're an educator. So if there are others who are listening who use Digo or who use another social bookmarking tool in an education setting, we'd love to hear your experience on the listserv as well.
Made extensive use of Digo in my presentations in Hong Kong. I have long since given up lists of, you know, on a Word doc or, you know, printed copy. I just give them the link to my Digo list that I've created for them. And it allows you not only to keep the list, you can, and not only just tag, but you can create little descriptions about them and also put them in categories. and then also annotate the pages so that when they go there, they can see, you know, highlighting and annotations that have been made. So.
And the list can continue to grow. You're not giving them a static list, but a list that when you come across a great link, it can be added to. So that's very valuable.
Cool.
So. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you there on Digo.
All right. Our friend Tom Rosenau shared a couple of tags with us for via our Digo group on Wells Tech. And I love this first one. He specifically aimed it my direction. It's called a coffee table pie. And it's basically someone getting really creative with a Raspberry Pi computer. And in the course, they built this joystick-driven glass-topped coffee table. And I shouldn't say glass-top. It's actually a plexiglass. And he talks a lot about sealing it so that the monitor underneath is safe from spills. He says he even spilled something on it already. But I love what he did. He got a big monitor and mounted it underneath this table. And he goes into how he did all his wiring and things with the Raspberry Pi to make all the buttons and the joystick work. And then, you know, it's a great way to play Donkey Kong on your coffee table. So, yeah, I thought that was a cool use of a Raspberry Pi. You never know. We might have to try it here in the Draper household.
You should maybe explain, Sally, what Raspberry Pi is for some of our listeners.
Yeah, we have talked about it in the past, but good point. A Raspberry Pi is a new computer. It was just released in August, and it's only a $35 computer. It runs off an SD memory card with a Linux install on that memory card. And so you boot it up, you boot into Linux. It has some GPIO connection points, so you can add a breadboard and do some programming and make the Pi do all kinds of things for you. Or you can just go into the Linux graphical user interface and have a Linux computer. There's even a LAN port on this tiny little computer, and you can connect to the internet and have a $35 computer. So
So what cool. interesting stuff have you guys done with them?
Well, the project du jour is to make a musical hallway at school. And they're in the process of programming this. But basically, be kind of like the concept of musical stairs that you've seen maybe in museums. They've got some infrared lights and receivers. Yeah. And they're going to have about 8 of those going down the hallway at school. So that as people walk down the hallway, then they'll block those infrared lights and it'll play a sound. So that's what they're working on. They've done some soldering. It's very geeky and it's very exciting. So yeah, Raspberry Pi all the way.
I want some video if that ever comes to fruition.
It'll happen. You betcha.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Tom had one other thing to share. Let's see if I can switch to that. And that was great. App audio editing programs for Windows. And number one on the list is Audacity. Many people are familiar with Audacity. It's a free download and one that's very versatile if you're doing any kind of audio editing. Mm-hmm. But it was nice that they listed some others like Wavasaur, Jokasure, and the Linux Multimedia Studio. So if you're looking for some audio editing capabilities, perhaps one of these will solve that problem for you.
Great. Thanks for sharing, Tom. Appreciate it.
Yep. Next up, we had an email, Martin, from Julie Wagon Connect, which I got a big kick out of. Julie's one of our listeners. She's a missionary wife down in Mexico, and she wrote to us about last week's show. She said she really enjoyed it, as always, and appreciated the shout-out. We talked about her ironing and watching and listening to Wells Tech at the same time. And she was happy to hear some information about Moodle. Because she's actually tutoring their seminary students there in Mexico and working on their technology skills. And she'd like to capture this information, be able to share with those at a distance. And so learning more about Moodle and that environment was a big help to her.
Cool.
The other thing that she enjoyed about our show was your pick last week, Martin. You shared about Tunnel Bear, and Julie is going to put Tunnel Bear to work for her. Mm-hmm. And just to refresh, Tunnel Bear is a way for you to basically tunnel in or VPN into a computer in a different country, either the United States or the United Kingdom, so that it appears that you're in that country as opposed to a foreign country where you might not have access to everything in the same way. She says with a Mexican IP address, they're blocked from some websites, especially some financial and insurance sites. And so changing the IP worked for them. And she was just really, really excited about that and thanked you for that pick.
Cool. So, good.
Great to hear
My
that.
My pleasure, Julie.
Yep.
Very
Martin, you
words.
Shared on Twitter this week a link to something with your Google Calendar.
Yeah, and that was an article that talked about being able to embed Google Calendar in a little prettier fashion. We've long ago talked about Google Calendar and some of the features that may be of interest to congregations or schools wanting to maybe have a more full-featured calendar than maybe what would come with Final Web or some other calendaring solutions. And one of the neatest features is the ability to embed it on your website. But you only have very limited options when you do that embedding. You get the Google look. This set of scripts, and it's a little bit geeky, so you have to be a little comfortable and have to have some control over where the server is. You have to install some JavaScript, a .js file, and a little bit of a CSS file. So you, not everybody listening may not have either the skill or the ability, as far as the system is concerned, to do this. But if you can, it's probably well worth the effort. So let me share a screen here for those of you watching at home. And so the article was on Church Mag blog that I read called Pretty Good Calendar Embeds with Full Calendar. It's churchm.ag. And they gave a nice example. So they showed this Booking Daisy Hill site. And as I scroll down, you can see that the calendar looks like it's a right part of the web page, which is really what you want. You want something that looks integrated and uses the same color scheme and fonts and so on and so forth. So they've done a nice job with this, and it looks like it's just right a part of the website as opposed to maybe Google just kind of invading a little portion of your web page. So I thought this was a neat article, and I think I'm going to give this a try. I have not been able to see if this we can make this work with you know, embedding on Final Web, but I'm going to give that a shot and see if we can do that.
So tune in later, folks. I don't know if it'll be next week or not. Maybe you need to sleep a little after flying all over the world.
I
but
think so.
We'll wait for an update on that.
Okay.
All right. And then finally, we heard from Pastor Rob Gunther again, who's out at at Grace in Kenai, Alaska. And he said a parent in their school very generously donated a brand new smart board. And now they need to know what to do with it. And it's been a while since we've talked about smart boards on the podcast, but I did do a blog post about it last summer. And at the time was doing some training for our teachers and put together this mind map. So if you are looking for some smart board resources, you might want to check out my mind map. We'll have a link in the show notes. Lots of different blogs and podcasts about it, places to find smart board files, different games and manipulatives you can use on the smart board. And all of that, again, will be in the mind map link in the show notes.
Very nice. And that's going to about do it, I think, for community feedback.
That takes care of it this week, yes, sir.
Next week, we are returning to our book review, and we are reviewing a book by Gar Reynolds called Presentations, and it's all about how to create dynamic presentations. And we're looking at Chapter 3, those of you that want to plan ahead. That's actually the name of the chapter, Planning Ahead. Planning Analog, but it is talking about planning ahead when you're doing your presentation. So how to prepare to do a presentation and what are the steps necessary to make that presentation all it can be. So that's next week on the Wells Tech Podcast. Sally, thank you so much for joining once again. You kind of carried the show in all the prep work as usual, so I appreciate that. And my voice held out, and I didn't fall asleep. So.
Yep, hopefully you can get some rest now.
I hope so. And we will return next week, but before the show's over here, we want to make sure everybody is aware of our featured Wells Artist of the Week, and that's Corbin Creek and their song Epitaph by Corbin Creek. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you.